This is Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, racial justice editor at Yes Media. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Hundreds of journalists have signed on to a statement saying they condemn, quote, Israel's killing of journalists in Gaza and urge integrity in Western media coverage of Israel's atrocities against Palestinians. U.S. media coverage of Israel's brutal war on Gaza appears blatantly lopsided, taking claims of the Israeli state at face value, while requiring independent verification of the atrocities that Palestinians are reporting. It's a familiar pattern, says longtime peace and justice activist Medea Benjamin, who sees a strong link between uncritical media acceptance of the U.S.'s misdeeds in Iraq and coverage of what's happening today in Gaza. Medea Benjamin is co-founder of Global Exchange and Code Pink Women for Peace. She is the co-author with Nicholas Davies of War in Ukraine, Making Sense of a Senseless Conflict. She's also written Inside Iran, The Real History and Politics of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Drone Warfare, Killing by Remote Control, and many more. Her latest article, just published in Common Dreams, is entitled The Familiar Propaganda of U.S. Media Makes Horrors in Gaza Possible. Welcome to the program, Medea.
Nice to be on with you, Sonali.
Let's first talk about what's happening in Gaza before we bring that framing of the history of U.S. media coverage of the Iraq war. We're seeing such horrors play out right now. Some of it is making its way into U.S. media coverage. It's not in the headlines. It might be buried deep. And often it's accompanied by the caveat that it can't be independently verified. Much of it is simply not being reported. Do you think that the U.S. public is just getting the tiniest sliver of the sort of tip of the iceberg of what's truly happening in Gaza right now?
I think in the early weeks after October 7th, they were getting a completely one-sided picture without any context at all. Now that has changed somewhat. There is more coverage of the suffering that's going on in Gaza, but it's portrayed in the light that Hamas is using, for example, the hospitals as a human shield, and therefore it's okay to destroy the hospitals that are caring for everything from babies in incubator to children with third-degree burns and people with in need of dialysis and other treatments that require electricity. Death toll, of course, keeps rising and rising, but we see much less in terms of the humanization of the suffering in Gaza than we saw about the humanization of the suffering in Israel after October 7th. So yes, it's changing a bit, but still the general coverage gives the impression that the lives of Israelis are much more valuable, much more important, much more precious than the lives of Palestinians.
And it's really interesting to see the justification of the killings of Palestinian civilians, you know, because at one point Hamas had been elected into Palestinian government institutions. They were seen as, all Palestinians were seen as responsible for all of the actions of Hamas. And one wonders if, you know, all Americans ought to be held responsible for all the misdeeds of, say, Donald Trump or Joe Biden or George W. Bush.
Absolutely. And also there is this demonization of people who have been killed, not only questioning the numbers that are put out by the health ministry in Gaza, but also there are members of Congress, for example, who are saying, well, you say women were killed. How do we know they weren't women combatants? You say children were killed. How do we know they weren't children combatants? They are saying that most of all of the people killed have been combatants, which is absolutely ridiculous. And the other thing that's implied in your question, Sonali, is who is Hamas? Having been there myself many times, I know that there is a political and administrative wing of Hamas who, until this crisis, were the ones that picked up the garbage, that ran the schools, that ran the healthcare system. And so are you going to target anybody who worked for the government or provided any services to the people of Gaza as Hamas, who must be eliminated? And then, of course, there's this issue of what would come if indeed you were able to eliminate the political, the military wing of Hamas, that you would get something worse, and you're getting something worse as time goes by and more people become absolutely enraged by what Israel is doing. And you can see that those are people who are anxious to seek revenge. And so the cycle of violence is just being perpetuated and exacerbated.
So let's talk about how the US's war on Iraq, that began more than 20 years ago, in many ways is linked to how Israel is justifying its war on Gaza, both in terms of the political establishment's approach to Iraq, as well as media hypocrisy on how the Iraq war was covered. Did the US's actions, you know, in the early 2000s, essentially offer cover for what Israel is doing today?
Absolutely, in the sense that the US killed hundreds of thousands, if not a million people, used the same justifications in leveling entire cities such as Mosul in Iraq or Raqqa in Syria, that we had to get rid of everybody and level the place, like Lindsey Graham is saying should happen in Gaza, that it was okay to bomb densely populated areas because there were terrorists in their midst, which is totally illegal. And the difference, I think, is that we didn't see a lot of this. The American people were shielded from the level of destruction that the U.S. perpetuated in Iraq, and did not see the suffering of civilians, the destruction of the infrastructure, the complete razing of cities or neighborhoods in some other cities. This was shielded from the American view. One thing that is similar, though, is that what we did see in the case of Iraq, we saw through embedded journalists. And we're seeing that today when someone like Nick Robertson in CNN is embedded with the Israeli Defense Forces and goes in and shows the world through CNN what is happening through the eyes of the Israeli soldiers as they are committing a genocide on the people of Gaza. So in that sense, the point of view is similar in that it's coming from the attacker and not from the victims.
When we think about what Israel is doing in Gaza, it seems as though we're not allowed to put it in the framework of international law or put it into context, because any criticism of Israel has been so successfully equated to anti-Semitism by the mainstream that it's just simply not allowed. I mean, this seems to be an additional dimension of Israel's war on Gaza. I don't know if it has a parallel in the US war on Iraq or not, but it also seems that an effective way then of keeping that idea alive, which is criticism of Israel equals anti-Semitism, also means disappearing the activism of anti-war and pro-Palestinian Jewish Americans and even Israelis, right?
Yes, and I think there is a parallel, Sonali, in that it's this good versus evil, this black versus white. In the case of Iraq, the U.S. is good. So even though we went into there, invade them on the basis of false pretenses, we had to do it because Saddam Hussein was so evil. And in this case, whatever the Israelis are doing are justified because Hamas is so evil, without putting it in the context of Israeli oppression for decades, or in the context in Iraq of U.S. hegemony and U.S. insistence that it had the right to take out regimes that it didn't like. So there is something similar there. And in terms of the anti-Semitism, yes, I was recently at a rally that rabbis were doing calling for a ceasefire. And a couple of people walked by and yelled out, fake Jews. And of course, others yelled out, self-hating Jews. This is the framework for those very brave people and in groups like Jewish Voice for Peace, If Not Now, and this new group called Rabbis for a Ceasefire are putting themselves forward and incurring the wrath of other members of the Jewish community. But I think it's even more difficult for people who are non-Jews to be standing up for Palestine, because it's easier for the pro-Israel forces to paint them as anti-Semites. I have been going to hearings on Capitol Hill, and there will be three in the last 2 weeks that are all about the rise of anti-Semitism, the rise of anti-Semitism in campuses, for example, and they don't even include the rise of Islamophobia, the rise in anti-Arab sentiments, the doxing of students, the declaring illegal organizations like Students for Justice in Palestine. Those are not even brought into the room. So yes, this whole idea that being anti-Israel is being anti-Semitic is something that Israel promotes, because it is a way to try to cancel all of the growing and vociferous opposition to what Israel is carrying out in Gaza.
Medea, it's one thing for the Congress and its extreme pro-Israel slant to ignore and, you know, basically apply double standards to ignore Palestinians and apply double standards. It's another thing for the U.S. media to do the same. And I'm wondering if you can point out how the U.S. media has basically been in lockstep with establishment talking points when it comes to war, both in the U.S. war on Iraq and today in Israel's war on Gaza. I mean, it should be headline news that there's huge opposition to what Israel is doing among American Jews, but it's not.
Well, that's right. And it should be headline news that this is a genocide that is being carried out. And yet, when you look at U.S. mainstream press or the TV, this is a term that they do not use. For many, many years, they would not even use the term occupation. They don't use the term siege of Gaza that has been going on for 16 years. So there is no framing that allowed the American people to understand what is going on right now. And that is very deliberate. In the case of Iraq, I mentioned the embedded journalists, but you had the majority of journalists using the talking points that came directly from the White House. And in the case of Gaza right now, you have talking points that are coming directly from the Israeli government. And until very recently, where the Biden administration has started to gently shift its speech a little bit to call on Israel to do more to protect civilians, in general, you see the U.S. media using the talking points of Israel, and they are ignoring what the United Nations is saying, just like the United States ignored what the United Nations was saying in the case of the invasion of Iraq, ignored the calls for investigations of war crimes by the International Criminal Court to investigate the United States, just like Israel is dismissing any idea that they should be held accountable in some place like the International Criminal Court. And I also think it's important to recognize the fact that the U.S. got away with what it did in Iraq and what it did in Afghanistan and what it did in Libya, was never held accountable for those crimes. Gives Israel the green light and the sense of strength that it too can get away with these types of crimes.
So, Medea, when we think about shedding light on what's happening today, one thing that's very different from 20 years ago is that there's greater peer-to-peer communication. Maybe the social media of 2 or 3 years ago would have enabled more news around what's happening to Palestinians to be accessible. Of course, these days, companies like Facebook and Twitter have deprioritized the sharing of news, and their algorithms make it really much harder to share news coming directly out of Gaza, but it's still perhaps more accessible than it was in the early years of the U.S. war on Iraq. Do you think that digital communication and social media has helped to crack that silence and propaganda and the false claims of the government of Israel, the government of the U.S., and the U.S. news media?
Absolutely. I think it's a huge difference. The ability of some of these podcasts to reach millions of people, the sharing of footage that is coming directly from Gaza all over the social media does really create a huge crack in the wall of the Israeli/US propaganda. And I think we see this in the public opinion polls, because despite the one-sided view that the mainstream media is given, you see now that 66% of the American people and 80% of Democrats want a ceasefire. That is quite remarkable, especially not only because the media coverage doesn't call for that, but because the White House doesn't, but because the Congress doesn't. In fact, there are only 18 members of Congress on the House side and one senator that have called for a ceasefire. So I think both the government and the mainstream, the corporate media, are really out of step with what the American people are thinking and feeling right now. And there is a huge disconnect there. And we have to attribute a lot of that to social media.
Finally, Medea, what can Americans do who are seeing past the headlines, who are in touch directly with Palestinians, or maybe they're accessing independent media sources? Do you recommend writing to the newsrooms of mainstream media and, of course, members of Congress, urging them to report on the truth, to tackle the truth, because, you know, we are, as you said, seeing it clearer now than we did 20 years ago with the U.S.'s war on Iraq. Do you encourage that kind of activism?
Yes, and so much of that is happening around the country, not only people writing to their print media, but also doing protests. For example, here outside the offices of the CNN and Washington Post, there have been regular protests. We also see the explosion of protests all over the country at the offices of members of Congress, at the more and more trade unions getting involved. We have a group at Code Pink that is organizing a much broader group of women again for a ceasefire. There are so many groups on campuses now. There is an explosion of grassroots uprising, and I think this is having an impact. I see it when I go into Congress and we ask the people in the front room who are the younger interns, what are the calls coming in like? And just about every place we go, they say, well, it's about 80% in favor of a ceasefire. People are making their voices heard. We just have to do it more, because let's remember, many of the people who are supposed to represent us are being funded by pro-Israel groups and pro-weapons manufacturers groups. And they're not used to doing the bidding of the people in their constituency. They're used to doing the bidding of these lobby groups. So they have to hear us loud and clear before they will change their opinion. But I see it shifting. And I think if we do it even more, I encourage people to make a call every single day to their congressperson, telling them that they demand a ceasefire. They demand that their congressperson represent them. Call your senators as well. And yes, contact your local media and demand that they show views from the pro-Palestinian side, from the people in Gaza, show the real suffering and destruction that is going on now with U.S. bombs and U.S. tax monies, and also call on our representatives to not fund more destruction that Israel is carrying out. Do not vote for another $14 billion for Israel to keep destroying the lives of the Palestinians in Gaza. It must stop. We must stop paying for it. They have blood on their hands, and tell them no more.
Medea, thank you so much, as always, for joining us. Really appreciate your time and the work that you do.
Thank you so much. Nice talking to you, Sonali.
My guest has been Medea Benjamin, co-founder of Global Exchange and Code Pink Women for Peace, longtime anti-war activist. Her latest article, just published in Common Dreams, is entitled "The Familiar Propaganda of U.S. Media Makes Horrors in Gaza Possible," co-written with Nicholas Davies. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, racial justice editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast is on iTunes and Spotify.